We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Kirk Your Enthusiasm. It is Thursday night, about 10:45. The Mavericks just finished their second preseason game. If you're a part of the feed, you have the option of listening to our new occasional post-game after show called Moneyball After Dark. Tonight, Josh and I talked a little bit about, you know, what happened, the stuff we liked, the stuff we didn't. We're going to be trying to do that from now on. Tonight, I have on a longtime internet friend, Ben Collins of NBC News. He was one of the few, the proud, that forced Luka to come to the Mavericks by sheer will. He wrote It is true. You wrote an article for Mavs Moneyball that came out like 3 hours before the draft, and I think that was the thing which got the Mavericks to listen to us finally and push him over the edge. You're a longtime Mavs fan, a future Slam contributor, former Mavericks child reporter, which was the thing I had no idea about. You are a man of many talents. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. By the way, I think the Luka thing happened because in that column, I'm pretty sure I threatened to murder the Hawks GM. So, like, maybe he just got the vibe that, like, oh yeah, if I don't make this trade, then because it was not at the end of the day, it was pretty cheap. Cam Reddish and Trae Young is a pretty good deal.
I feel good. The only thing that would have been better is if we really should have done something similar on lottery night so that the Mavericks could have had Zion, who, good Lord, if you watched him tonight, the last time I checked, he had 29 points of 12 of 13 shooting. I think he's going to be pretty good. I don't think we should talk about him potentially being on the Mavs because we're just going to get sad. But have you watched any preseason ball to date?
Yeah, so I watched that exact New Orleans Pelicans game the night before where he seemed to just steamroll people and then sit on the bench and then come back and steamroll people. He's very, very scary. And he's going to be he's in our division. This is a problem. It's going to be an issue for years to come. And I'm not sure Maxi Kleber is going to be the guy who's going to stop him.
No, but he's the only guy too they can put on him. Like Justin Jackson is going to get destroyed.
No, yeah, because actually tonight, and funnily enough, I was watching this game tonight, and I didn't realize we had, unless Dwight Powell comes back super jacked, we have sort of like a size issue all of a sudden, because speaking of people getting rolled, Dorian Finney-Smith and Justin Jackson on Blake Griffin was not a great thing. But I did like what we saw. I think largely this team looks pretty good, right? I think we have when you have Luka and KP on the floor at the same time, you see something. It's going to be very spooky for a few years. Like, this is a really good little pick and roll to have, and they don't really have to do anything else. People get very confused on that pick and roll defensively. There are people wide open in the corner, and if we have people in the corner just hitting jump shots, then we're in very good shape for a few years.
Yeah, it was one of those things where there was one play, I think it was in the first half, but basically Porzingis finally like stepped in and took a little running floater himself from about 15 feet that just swished. And at that point, the Detroit announcers are like, well, what are we supposed to do here? And I think that's really going to be the Mavericks' plan, is to just score as many points as possible, which is, you know, kind of a, I said this on the Moneyball After Dark podcast, it's kind of a stupid thing to say, but they're not built for defense. They're built for scoring. And I think that, you know, there's a likelihood that these two guys are each going to have to put up, you know, 21 to 23 points a game for the Mavericks to be competitive in any given night.
No, I don't think that's stupid at all. I think that's a very, I think it's kind of prescient, because you saw the best that they played was when they were forcing turnovers, sort of jumping lanes. If it backfired, whatever, that was probably their best chance defensively, is to, I don't know, force some panic, because they can't really match up, especially on big, especially with a big team like Detroit, they couldn't really match up. So, right. And by the way, I liked what I saw of Luka defensively too. He had a couple steals. The lawn looked very good. So, look, I agree with you. I think what they got to do, they got to continually push the ball, and in the half court, just like spam that pick and roll, just keep going with it over and over again. I thought they looked. Frankly, for a team that had never really played together like this, especially because it's kind of a weird combination, right? It's a point forward and a guy who's 7'3" who pops all the time. It looked very good for a first real basketball game.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased. Well, let's hop into what, you know, you, this is, I think, my 11th or 12th episode. And, you know, I've been running through my list of friends, inviting kind of one at a time. You know, you do a lot of media hits for your real job, and I'm sure like there's always like a PR in between where somebody has to reach out, connect with the people that, you know, you have to go through, and yeah, and these things get set up for you. For me, it's like always kind of weird where I ask, you know, I'm always asking my friends for like a chunk of their time. And whereas you basically said, I need to talk Mavericks, when can I come on? And, you know, my colleague Josh Bowe was a little irritated with me, just because, you know, he's like, Ben is my guest. Well, you know, Josh took a bit of a sabbatical and is like getting his feet wet. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to have Ben on. I'm sure he'll want to come on again. Heck, half the people who like want to talk Mavs that do other things for a living, you come on these things, and it's like all of a sudden what I had planned for a half hour conversation is like an hour and 15. So you actually sent me a list of stuff that you wanted to talk about. So I wrote it down. I wrote everything down, kind of organized it, because it was great. You know, basically like a wall of text. And let's start with what you know, these are not in any particular order, but the first thing that I gathered was, you think Seth Curry should start. Make the case.
Yeah. First of all, these are all hot takes. Like, I think these are, this one's like a 6 on the hot take thing, but the next one is like a 9.5. So we'll see how these go. My 6th take is that Seth Curry should start. I didn't think he looked particularly good in these first couple games. I think he looked sort of out of place. Mm-hmm. But I think that you need continual spacing on weird parts of the floor when you have this specific roster, especially if you're starting Dwight Powell and DeLon, right? Yep. When you start two guys who, like, as you are the biggest, you're the patron saint of Dwight Powell shouldn't be shooting threes. Right. If you really shouldn't be doing that, then you really actually need a definitive 3-point shooter out there whose only job is to sit there and shoot threes in the corner. And I think Seth could be that guy. He has incredible splits. Last year he was fourth in 3-point shooting percentage in the league, right?
Yeah, he's outstanding.
He's very good at this. And you finally have a way to get him some space. You know, if you have Dwight serving as a role man, KP serving as both a role man and a pop guy, and you can run a little motion offense for him, just like you would with, if you had like JJ Redick or Kyle Korver or something, you can run him through some screens. I think that's the sort of offense that you can go to when you've overdone it with the pick and roll, or, you know, you can't really get a quick bucket. That's what you would want in a starting two, I think, next to Luka and Wright. So I think it makes sense. I think they might start Justin Jackson because he's been very good. And I understand that.
What if I told you he has one rebound? What if I told you Justin Jackson has one rebound in 37 minutes of preseason action?
That is,
so I'm not so sure about that.
Okay, good point. That's fair. He has, so like other than the rebounding, he's reminding me of Josh Howard a little bit. Is that like jackknife floater thing? And
yeah, the movement. No, he's good around. Yeah. The I agree.
No, he looks comfortable for the first time that I've seen him. Last year, he didn't look that comfortable. He looks a little afraid to shoot sometimes, and you know. But this year, he looks just much, I guess, physically stronger and more comfortable on the floor. So I get that if you want to start him there. But I didn't know that rebounding stat, and that's horrifying. That's really bad. But that's the thing is, I think that you need somebody who can just space the floor, period. Because otherwise, you get really jammed up, especially with Powell down in the paint. I think you want as much space as possible, just so you're not accidentally getting doubled, or KP's not getting doubled at the elbow when he's shooting a jump shot. Like, that's what you'd want, and I think Seth can do that. So, do you agree with this? Am I way off base here?
No, there's something to it, because like in our Slack channel tonight, someone who I think it was Josh, it might have been Kevin, one of our other guys, who pointed out that Seth Curry was the third guy off the bench. And he's not an eighth man. What, you know, we signed him to a 4-year, $32 million contract. You've spit out some of his stats. He's a really good shooter. I understand Tim Hardaway Jr. exists. I understand that we have some of these areas, but like the Mavericks really are deficient in particular areas that can get exposed quickly. And if they want to win games, I think they will end up experimenting with a fair number of lineups. So it's, I think a 6 on a hot scale is fair. It depends on how much they decide that they care about defense. You know, the one thing about Josh Jackson on that starting lineup is everybody on the floor was 6'5 or taller. So even though I don't think it was a particularly good defensive unit, they take up a lot of space. Like being able to have arm span is nice.
They're hypothetically switchable, right? That's what you think, is that hypothetically you could just switch every screen and run around like that. But that's not really what's actually happening. Because you saw, like, I saw Maxi get lost a couple times. Like, he's looked pretty rough to me in these first couple games. He got lost a couple times, so then you randomly have Luka trying to defend Andre Drummond, and that's just not happening. So, again, the switchability only makes sense if everybody can really switch. Like that's what worked for the death lineup for the Warriors, and that's great. But if you have like a large missing piece at the top of it, then the whole thing falls apart. So if you're just doing this for defense, it doesn't really make sense. I agree. They should try to outrun teams over and over again, and just rack up points. And then if you win like 135 to 131, whatever, that's probably the best solution that we have. It's a win, exactly.
Yeah, and we'll have fun covering it. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Now, this might have been my favorite on your list, and I actually did some research into this topic because I was pretty curious. Your second hot take is that Luka Doncic is too skinny now.
I think that he is appropriate. I think he has lost a tiny bit of weight, right? Maybe. Oh. I don't know.
Here's where my research
is
comes
this, from. Is this wrong? Okay.
Tim McMahon said today, and I don't know if this has been reported before. I feel like it hasn't. I feel like this might have been one of those things all the Mavs beat people kept to themselves, and because the NBA until this year didn't require the height and weight stuff specifically. Luka Doncic came into camp last year. What do you think he weighed?
225.
247.
Jesus Christ.
And now I'm a hefty, I'm kind of a chunk myself, but I'm not a professional athlete, so who cares? This guy was carrying too much weight for most of the season. I think that's kind of fair.
247 is a, you're right. That's oh my God.
He ripped fast tonight. That was kind of the thing that stood out to me. It's like he kind of booked it, and that was really interesting. But still, make the case for the fact that you think he might be too skinny for how he plays.
Okay, so I didn't know he was 247. That's like two Whataburger, like supersized meals a day.
I bet he lost 10 pounds through camp, though. You know, I bet he started the season under 240.
Right. I think what I'm trying to do is ward off the idea that this guy has to be, like, he has to have six-pack abs and look like a guy who he should not look like Fight Club Brad Pitt ever. I think that's bad for him. And I think that's a bad ideal for him, because part of what makes him the player that he is that he absorbs a lot of contact. He's sort of unafraid of doing weird stuff once he's in the paint. And if he's skinny, it's not going to work. That said, I think that like right now, this is a good weight. This is a good place to be. And I think they should be more focused on conditioning with him because he does look a little gassed already. Like I saw, like in the third quarter, he looked a little red in the face, I would say. So they should be focused more on conditioning with him and getting him so he's not tired at all. Because he makes weird decisions up in the air once he starts to get tired. As you know, you've seen these. You've seen like the weird, funky passes he makes once he's up in the air.
He gets like a testy teenager too, and he starts doing like it's a little showmanship. He gets a little chippy. And I agree. Yeah. I think that's when he's tired. He's not thinking. He's not. He goes from being competitive to kind of pushing it over to the edge. So I do. You're right. I hadn't really thought about that. I think that might be an aspect of it. He's just so competitive, but then his body doesn't want to cooperate.
Yeah, I think there's like Sugar Crash Luka, which is what happened tonight with like he got into like a little fight with Bruce Brown, right? And that was weird. And then there's like pissed off Luka, which is the best kind of Luka. And that's what you want to be. You want him to be in shape enough so in the fourth quarter he can get pissed off and go and just take over a game, which is the best kind of what he is. And that's not going to show physically. He's not going to be like physically jacked. You're not going to be able to see it in like biceps and stuff. But you're going to be able to see it where at the end of the game, he doesn't look like he's about to like go punch somebody in the face. He looks like he wants to like take over the game instead. So that's where I'm at. I think that the focus on him and how chunky he is sort of like off base. I think the focus should be on like how he looks at like the end of the third quarter.
Well, there's a companion argument that Adam Mara's made on my second podcast like 3 months ago about Jokic, and he was basically making the point that because he's such a big guy that it ends up working to his advantage with how he plays, because even if the Nuggets play fast, he still plays fairly methodically, and he's such a big dude that over the course of a game, over the course of a series, that weight can work to his favor so long as they're not getting like ran out of the gym. And, you know, Luka and LeBron and some of these bigger guys who need to absorb that contact to stay, to basically not necessarily stay upright, but it's a part of their game. Like that's part of their balance is absorbing the contact. So I'm not really worried about his weight either. I think the cardiovascular shape is a big deal. That'll probably be a multi-year thing. We've seen it with James Harden. There's biomechanic thing that he did last year. That was like, we talked about that before the draft. There's enough working for him. I think this reads like a hot take. I think this is about a five, because I do believe it's of concern. I really do, because, you know, you've been in locker rooms before. You were also in locker rooms back in the times whenever these guys were a lot bigger. These NBA players these days are thin. That's why it's like, I'm mocking Luka for being, 6'7" and 247. Well, I'm 6'2" and I'm about 242. And, it's not this height and weight difference stuff is not that, we're talking matter of percentage point, like less than percent points with some of these guys. So it's like they add and drop 5 pounds. I'm just not super worried about it either. I think it'll work itself out over the course of his career. It depends on how much we care about it, like this year.
Yeah, no, I think that's part of it too, is that people are projecting some sort of long-term health problem that probably isn't going to exist. He's a professional athlete. Yep. And I realized that there have been problems in the past with people like Charles Barkley or something like that. But that's like a different body type entirely. It's a different kind of shape of person. And I think that that's, I think people are overthinking it a little bit with Luka. And that's fine. I get it. You want to protect this kid because he's so good. But it's not – I just don't think it's necessary. And if we're at the All-Star break and he looks tired again, then – maybe we talk about it. Maybe we have to bring in like, Kobe's weird ass trainer. But if that's the case, then that's the case. Then the best Luka is Luka that has like a joy for the game and isn't, just tied down to weird conditioning programs. And that's the one we have now. I just like it to stay that way. It'd be really nice.
See, that's why I have it as a five. Okay. Your next one, not sure where it's going to fall on the scale. You said, what if Jalen Brunson takes the leap? So what do you mean? Okay, so and where do you think this falls?
Okay. So if by the leap you mean like the leap to Damian Lillard, this is a 10.5, right? Like,
this is, no, I understand.
But yeah, but I mean like the leap to like Fred VanVleet or like the leap to like a legitimate starting quality point guard. And honestly, in the first couple of games, I kind of see it. I wrote this question before these games started, and I heard some buzz. You hear stuff going around that maybe he's, you know, maybe he's a little bit better than we think he is. And he has sort of a bounce now. He has this, he's been shaking people up a little bit. He's really confident off the dribble. He has like a step back three now. He's tiny, I get it, but he's sort of the prototypical point guard that Rick Carlisle is obsessed with, but nobody else in the league cares about. So I, you know what I'm saying? Like the JJ Barea thing. So maybe there's something here. Maybe he's better than we think he is. Are you seeing anything that I'm seeing?
I like him. I think he dribbles too much. Like he gives me the extreme JJ Barea vibes, which can work both for and against him. But in terms of how his game works, he, you know, he gets to the basket. He makes these really interesting, you know, kind of floating moves off of pivots and shot fakes. I really hate his 3-point shot fake. He does like this thing that dads at the YMCA do where he like throws the ball up and like kicks his foot way back. It's like anybody doesn't think you're going to shoot the ball. That's just me. I am a fan of him though. I wasn't a really big fan of his as a draft pick, but he simply got better every month. And by the end of the year, he was in the argument for, you know, top three Mavs player for you know, like that March, April period. So that's kind of where I am with him.
Yeah. I think also we had this vision in our head because he had such a bad first summer league. He was like, you couldn't stay on the floor. He was very bad. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't hit it. He looked nervous, which is weird because he was supposed to be like the sure thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And then over time, we were like, actually, maybe he just had a bad week or something. It was weird. We still don't know what happened there. But over time, it took us a lot of time to get over the trust issues we had at the beginning. And now he looks very good. And like listening to the Detroit announcers talk about him, it's like for a team that's a little deficient in playmaking in Detroit, they were kind of fawning over him. And I get it. Like from an outside perspective, this kid controls the game really well. Doesn't make any weird decisions at all, period. And like, yeah, he dribbles too much and he's definitely like, he pounds the rock like JJ does. But I think there's something here. And by the way, he's clearly like best friends with Luka, which is very helpful. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. If we are talking about him taking a leap into Steph Curry territory, this is a flaming hot take that I should be like shipped out of the country for. But I think it's like a four of a hot take in terms of like Mikey sort of displaced DeLon by the end of the year. Yeah, maybe. Could see happening.
I think that's an interesting one because DeLon's 3-point shot is going to really depend on how much he plays. He was tonight. I remember two passes that he received in the opposite corners, each one from Luka, and he buried one and he bricked the other. And his ability to hit those open threes at a percentage that's acceptable is basically going to determine whether he can play or not, because his defense is pretty good, but he doesn't really do anything spectacularly, I think. And if Brunson, who is a pretty good shooter, like I think he's a much better shooter actually, is able to hit those shots, this is then that comes back to what we were talking about earlier about the offensive role. And I do think that Rick will experiment with that sort of thing, because it really, you know, as much as I hate to admit it, JJ Barea is probably going to have a role in the offense. So you gotta find minutes for these guys somewhere. There's, as much as I don't really love the depth of talent on the team, there's a bunch of guys at about the same talent level that are going to make arguments at different points in the year for playing. Let's move on to your next one. Now, this one is the only one I think I kind of didn't entirely understand, so you might have to flesh it out for me. So we all agree that the Mavericks are going to be, at minimum, entertaining with a opportunity to be good. But the rest of the division somehow also got better. Even the stupid Memphis Grizzlies are going to be better. Whether or not they want to be good is of a matter of decision. They're young, but the Pelicans are better, and obviously the Rockets are outstanding, and the Spurs still exist. So talk to me a little bit about what you were thinking here.
Yeah, so I just don't know how we make up wins in this division, right? So I think that we will be objectively considerably better. And I also think they'll show in win totals. Is that enough to get us into the playoffs? Like, is that enough to get us over 500? That's a really tough question when you have to play New Orleans, who's very good and sort of eats up at our strengths in every way many times this year. I think you played them, what, four times in division?
Yeah, three times in the first 20 games, though.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that's an issue. So you play New Orleans, and then you play Houston, who is maybe the best team in the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. They have probably the best regular season team in the NBA. That's what it looks like to me. They don't have a lot of time. They don't need to gel. They're basically the same team except with Russell Westbrook, and he's played with Harden in the past. So I don't know where we pick up those wins. We could just, like, run roughshod through the East. We kind of did that last year, too, for the first half of the season. Like, if there was a lottery team, we beat them last year in the first half. So I think what it'll be like, I do think, first of all, our schedule is a little soft going into the All-Star break, going into the trade deadline. So we have an opportunity here. We'll talk about that in a minute, but to look like we are bound for the playoffs early on. And then as it gets hard, as the season wears on, as you know, we don't know what Luke is gonna look like the second half of the season. We don't know if KP will make it to the second half of the season. He really hasn't in the past. So I'm just worried about, like, where are those wins? Like, I mean this in just not in an ethereal sense, and like a just an objective reality. Like, are we really gonna beat New Orleans four times? Are we gonna, you know, are we gonna beat Memphis all four times? I'm not sure about that. So
that was what was crazy last year. The Mavericks lost some absolutely atrocious games to teams they shouldn't beat. You know, they start off the year and they lose to the Phoenix Suns, and these are the, so you know, they ended up playing. I hear what you're saying, because there was that stretch in November, December before Bray got hurt where they were just outstanding at home. So I need to get more into the schedule and see where they are with, in terms of like home road splits, if there's any long spots there. That's going to be kind of, you know, worth looking into, but I don't know who they're going to strip wins from. I hear what you're saying. I do think, because they're so different in terms of, you know, the roster, I do think they're going to be almost unscoutable for the first, you know, series of games. So I'm happy we're playing the Pelicans three times in 20 games, because I think that we could steal some games from them. For example, they, you know, it's just preseason, but they beat the Chicago Bulls by 2 points tonight. The Mavericks are significantly better than the Bulls. Like, that's not even a question. Yeah. So obviously they're going to play different rotations, different guys. Zion might score 40 points in 40 minutes, yada, yada, yada. But that's, so getting a jump on these, even if they might be more talented, getting a jump on the teams that aren't, you know, as well coached and don't have a hierarchy. The Mavericks have a very defined hierarchy of who's supposed to be doing what. And I think that ends up working out in their favor. That's the argument on paper as you look at things.
Yeah. And like you said, we are considerably better coached than most teams in the league. And we have a defined system that we know, you know, we know what it looks like. And we know, even at the absolute base, like the baseline of talent, with like the OJ Mayo and Darren Collison years, we were still not that bad because of what that system does when they're not tanking. You know, basically that system, when you're not tanking, gets you 35 wins one way or another. So that's my hope, is that's the absolute floor for this. That's great. And then on top of that, you build in KP, man, he looks really tough to stop. Like there, like you said about that floater, I hope everybody go to YouTube, look up this floater. Basically, there's 4 seconds left in the shot clock. I think he has Andre Drummond on him or Blake Griffin or something.
Yeah.
And somebody who's huge, and he's up in his grill because there's 4 seconds left trying to stop a three. So he's just like, okay, I'm just gonna take you off dribble. The guy stays with him the entire way. KP just like rises up, hits this floater over him. It literally does not hit any piece of that rim. It's incredible. And that he's just like, I can't imagine what he's going to be like when he has to take it seriously. Like when we're in real game situation. So to me, that's just by itself is 7 more wins. That puts you over 500. So that's what it looks like. In my head, we are at least a 500 team. But if I look through the schedule, I'm like, okay, it's much scarier when you actually, like, when you go game by game.
Sure. Okay, guys, this has been Kirk Henderson with Mavs Moneyball and my friend Ben Collins of NBC News. We are going to be right back after this commercial break with some more hot takes and maybe a couple of questions. So stick with us through commercial. We will be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Okay, guys, you're back to Kirk, Your Enthusiasm. This is Kirk Henderson with Mavs Moneyball. I'm here with Ben Collins of NBC News. Now, we have been talking about Ben's hot takes, and I need to pull the document back up because I've pulled my game document back up. So you think that your next one, and this one is going to – this one drives Mavs fans nuts. Matt Moore said it on my first podcast. I tend to agree. You think New Orleans has more – talent in the, like, you know, 3 through 8 spot than any single person on the Mavericks team. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. And I by the way, I'm not sure that's a bad thing necessarily. I think that, like you said, that you've clearly defined roles when you have your two best players are so much better than anybody else, right? Whereas New Orleans, I'm not sure, maybe they won't get Zion enough touches. And I've already seen Jrue Holiday sort of get iced out a little bit here. So mm-hmm. That is a problem. But it is also an issue that, you know, this kind of feeds into my other hot takes that come later on, but it's true. If KP is out for a couple of games or Luka needs a rest, where is that offense coming from? I really mm-hmm. don't know. I mean, that's why I'm hoping Jalen takes some sort of leap or DeLon has a little bit more playmaking than I think he does, because it's going to get dark pretty quick. Like, that offense is going to stall out. You're going to be running set plays. It's going to be very academic, I would say, because sure. There's no other way to get – there's really no other way to get the ball in the net. It's going to be like the Knicks with KP, where he's just – they just have him at the elbow just being like, do your thing, man. Because otherwise, I don't know what's going to happen. I think, like, New Orleans, say Zion's up for a game, like, whatever. You start J.J. Redick instead, and then you have him running through screens. Or you
– sure.
You have Lonzo pushing the ball more. You have Jrue Holiday isoing or something. You have options. Whereas with us, it's like it's pretty dark after the first two.
I feel like that's the case. Like with New Orleans and with Sacramento, they might have a number. They essentially go 8 to 9 deep with starting caliber players, the guys that could soak up 20 to 25 minutes. That, you know, as interesting as it looks on paper and you're saying, oh, they could do lots of things, I do think with the coaching involved, that could also work against them. I just don't know, you know, how, like, what do the Pelicans do about, like, Brandon Ingram, who needs the ball a lot to thrive? Lakers fans and probably Pelicans fans are going to disagree with me on this, but being a B to B plus version of Luka Doncic or Giannis is not a great basketball player. It's just not. It's not effective. It's not efficient. And it also doesn't lead to wins. So I just don't know what a team like New Orleans does with some of this talent unless they can get guys to buy into the fact that if they, you know, play a structured sort of ball that lets, you know, Zion just rain terror on opposing teams while the rest of the really good players feast upon, you know, the fact that he is the center of defensive attention, which I really do think he might be just watching these games. I don't know what teams are going to do about him. So I don't know if that's, I don't think that's a hot take. I believe Mavericks fans would, you know, throw hands over this because they just don't like, you know, I don't like a lot of the late, you know, the former Laker players who are on the Pelicans team, but that doesn't mean they're not good. Like if we were to put, I think Lonzo Ball would be an incredible player next to Luka. Just incredible player.
Yeah.
And so it's really like fit matters a lot more in NBA when you get to that second and third and fourth tier of players than we give credit for.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that like you said with Sacramento, that's a really good example of a team I do not want to be. Like I would much rather have Dallas in their roster than Sacramento's, in part because Luke Walton has dealt with eight misfit toys that are all very good. And, you know, Fox is an incredible player, and they have some, they have so much front court depth. They don't literally do not know what to do with it. And Buddy Hield, who's their, probably their third best player, would be perfect here too, but they're not as good as us. They're just not, they don't have a system in place that works for them. They have Fox, maybe a superstar. I don't know, but I know Luke is a superstar and I know KP is a superstar. So I would much rather. Yeah, go ahead.
No, no, you finish.
Yeah. So I would, you know, I much prefer having as many people that I know for a fact at the end of a game can get you really tough buckets, will consistently get you, you know, 25 and 5, just continually fill up a stat sheet and not miss a game, than like this incredibly good, deep diaspora of talent that does all weird different things, but they don't make sense together. So that, sure. I would much rather be in Dallas's position.
Me too. Well, so part of why I inadvertently cut you off is I just received a text from my wife. I have non-breaking news to put on the podcast. Dirk Nowitzki played basketball this evening with Marcus Mumford and the rest of Mumford's and Sons band.
That's amazing. That's, yeah, those people were the luckiest people in the world.
And everybody was moving, you know, I'm sure even they're faster than Dirk. So that's, oh God, I hate social media and I love social media so much because
that's exactly what I want to see. I want to see dumb shit like that. That's the thing that keeps me going. I want to know great. That Dirk is dunking individually on each Mumford and each son.
probably then screaming, "I will wait for you" after each dunk. Okay. Your next take, which I love and I think is going to be the underarching story for a great portion of the season. Kristaps Porzingis and whichever load management schedule the Mavs go with is going to be very unpopular with the fan base.
Yeah, I think that they should hold him up for like 20 games. I think that that is the only way to make sure that he doesn't go through what he went through both seasons before the last one. So, look, he does play at 100% all the time, and that is awesome, and you don't want to stop him from doing that. But what you want to do is like limit the wear and tear in the interim. Yeah. And the only way to do that is, you know, keep him out of back-to-backs. Keep him, you know, if there's like long road trips, just pick games that you're like, okay, it's just not happening, and schedule them out and know that that's coming. Yeah. And again, that's not going to be a great thing, especially when Luka has to do much more, or they have to find other people to fill in those slots. Well, like, I'm assuming they'll just start Maxie and Dwight together. That's what I'm assuming. But that's going to be a thing. Like, and it's going to look like we're being too cautious too, because he's probably going to appear early on, especially as like perfectly healthy.
So, he has also in three seasons he has come out in October, November, and then part of December, like an absolute flamethrower and destroyer of worlds. That is how he has gotten the reputation he has. What is less known, particularly to fans who might not have watched Eastern Conference basketball, his efficiency drops tremendously month to month, to where he has almost not had a good part of the season that's after January 1st. It's been that definitive. Now, we're only talking about 186 games spread out over 3 years, so it's a little bit of a misleading sample size, but I think this is actually a great take. Now, where, if I'm a super optimistic Mavs fan, I'm looking at the schedule saying, look, you know, they have like something, I want to say it's between 11 and 13 back-to-backs. So if those are the games that you rest him on, paired with games where, okay, his knee's feeling a little sore, he's tired. I don't think 20 games is going to be that challenging to get to. I have kind of in my head, I've hoped for 65, which is, you know, the difference of three games between what you and I are talking about here. I think that's a victory. The Mavericks need to be very careful with him, obviously, and they need to protect him from himself, because he is he plays really hard, and that also works against him because he's just so darn gangly. Like, when he comes down, he had a tip dunk that right before he came out this evening, and he just lands awkwardly, and it freaks me out every time. I there's no other way around it. But I think that it really is going to bother the casual fan, the people who aren't listening to this podcast, who joined the Mavericks sometime mid-January after, you know, the Cowboys season is either in the crapper or on the way, you know,
that's going to be really where things get particularly interesting. You know, I agree with you. But I also think it's something that, you know, there's really no way around. They have to be careful.
Yeah, and part of what the problem is going to be, like you said, before he got hurt, he was an MVP candidate. Like, that is the level he was at. He was probably, I think in the MVP ladder, like second or third. Mm-hmm. He was taking a Knicks team whose second best player was like Ron Baker or something, and he was dragging them to the playoffs. That's going to be really unpopular if he, you know, if you sit him two times, three times a month for literally no reason in the Iowa casual fan. So it's going to be an issue to explain to people. It's going to be an issue for the team whose offense will be a little janky without him. But you got to do it. And it's, again, what's the point here? The point is that he stays healthy for another 10 years. And when the playoffs come around, he can play every playoff game. Mm-hmm. You got to look long term with this stuff.
So that, you know, we had two more things that you sent me, but I really only want to talk about one of them because I think we could talk about this for a while. The Mavericks might have the most opportunistic schedule that they have had since the 2014-15 season, if I'm looking at things correctly, because the first Harrison Barnes year, they just got pantsed. And these last 2 years, they stumbled just enough last year, and the year prior they had a really terrible start because they weren't a good team. This year it's really looking like, with, you know, they could play, and they, you know, arguably should play 500 basketball, and you know, that's kind of a lukewarm take. I think our fellow NBA aficionados would probably come out against that. You know, the over under people that really like gambling seem to want to just pound the under for the Mavericks. But I don't know. I'm a negative guy, but you know, when you go game by game with these months, there's cause for some optimism for the first time in a while, right?
If you look at their November schedule, it is very soft. It's, so you play the Lakers and then it gets mad soft. Cleveland, Orlando, New York, Memphis, Boston, who's not as good as I think people think they are, and New York again, Toronto, who's not there anymore, the Spurs, the Warriors, then back to Cleveland, then Houston and the Clippers and the Suns. Like, that's your November. That is you should win two-thirds of those games, three-quarters of those games, something like that. So, look, if you go into Christmas Day, where, again, it doesn't get that much stronger in December. Mm-hmm. If you go into there and you're five games over 500, you're going to develop some expectations, I think, because people are going to see Luka and KP gelling. Like, people are going to be like, maybe there's something to this team. And that's where I think you have a real chance to do what they tried to do a few years ago, where, you know, they saw a team that could make some sort of leap and they tried to improve it. And then they traded for Rajon Rondo, which was very funny. But I feel like if they make a trade like that, if they make a Rondo-like trade for an actually good player, they can accelerate this a little bit. And I think they should. So, look, I think they're going to be, again, I keep saying this, I am optimistic about this team, especially earlier in the season, because they, if you do the math, if you actually just like map this out, they should be in a very good place. And then I think they're going to have to upgrade to stay at that pace for the rest of the year. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it does. And I'm looking at the Mavs home road splits last year, and they were 24-17 at home, which for a team that was that bad is actually, you know, they finished with 33 wins. That's pretty outstanding. And that was when they were running, you know, March and April, they were running away from wins. That means they had a 9-32 away record. And that is where they need to gain some ground. If they could finish, you know, 25-16 at home, which is, you know, roughly a 60% winning percentage, and then close out, you know, just 15-16 of these road games, that ends up, you know, maybe 17, 18, you know, something. If they can get a few games over 500, that is my long-term hope, because I think that, you know, the West doesn't have
the over-unders for even the best teams are like in the 56 to 57 range. There's not going to be that like 60, 65 win juggernaut this year. It's just too much going on, which, you know, part of me thinks that means the barrier to the playoffs is something like 45 wins. But, you know, you get one unfortunate injury, you get one team that just doesn't gel, and then these things kind of unravel quickly to where I think, you know, that 42 to 44 win team might actually be able to sneak in, and that's where I think Dallas might have an opportunity to end up. I know that there are people out there that are really, really jazzed about their likelihood of wins, but the season's too long. The Mavs don't necessarily have the depth like we've talked about. That's sort of where my head is with this. I'm becoming a playoff optimist in the sense that as long as they're in the argument and don't die in this brutal is it January or February stretch? I moved away
from, I think it's February that it's really tough. Yeah.
As long as they don't die then maybe we'll be all right.
Yeah, it's February. It's dark in February. But that, again, like I said, first of all, they'll have a little break then for the All-Star break. They might be able to upgrade a little bit around then. They may even be players in like a buyout market situation. I just think there's an opportunity here for us. And like you said, too, I'm not inherently a person who – I didn't think we were going to make the playoffs last year. I'm not like an insanely optimistic person. I think we had a kind of rough offseason. But if you just look at it, if you just think about this logically, we're in pretty good shape. Like, right. we can pull this off. And I do think it's like things are just dependent on injuries for us and other teams, too. So, you know, if KP goes down or if Luka goes down, that's it. Close up shop, we'll go get Cole Anthony next year. But other teams will fall off the map too. Maybe Golden State, maybe it's just not going to work. They have three players. So,
and brutal. Like there was an Athletic article yesterday about how they might have to have Marquise Chris on the team. And he is not an NBA player, let alone an NBA rotation player. So
they're going to start a non-NBA rotation player. So, they're going to start probably Alphonso McKinney, you think? So they're in trouble. There are a bunch of teams who are one injury away from just packing it up. So we can slide into that spot very easily. And I like our chances of it, frankly. I think we're in good shape.
Well, see, this has been exactly what I had hoped for. You know, I got a couple more questions that I think I could save until another time. There's plenty of time for content. Do you have anything else you want to get out there before I let you go tonight?
I am very thankful that you allowed me to have a couple of, frankly, two spicy takes. We're talking about like Taco Bell fire sauce level takes on this thing. So I'm glad that you. I'm glad that you allowed me to do it. I wanted to get them out there. I felt a compulsion as a Mavericks fan. So I'm glad that we could do it. And I will gladly come back in a couple months and talk about how wrong I was.
Well, see, one thing that you have to aim to do this, I don't know, you know, it's the old Jalen and Jacoby line, don't get fired, but yeah, you have to find a way during one of your television spots this year to work in a Dallas Mavericks something. I know that it is completely out. You know, you go on Morning Joe, you're talking about QAnon and whatever other crazy batshit stuff is in the world. You know, there's got to be a ray of hope where you just say, you know, people look to Luka. Just want you to know. Yeah, something. There's got to be, you have to be able to do something ridiculous.
I was on a midday show once, and I was talking about like Russian disinformation and how bad they were the last time at midterm. And I was like, they were really bad this time, but they were just kind of going for it. And I was like, Hallie, do you know what a heat check is? And they were like, everyone that's in the set was like, don't do this. they were making the don't do this thing.
They're wrong. Look at the news cycle last 48 hours. Actually, the last 72 hours. Basketball is a unifying force in America. It brought Ted Cruz, Ben Sasse, and AOC to the table to where they all put out a weird joint statement together of political Voltron that I will never be able to wrap my brain around. You know, but it was basketball. It was basketball that did it. So that's really my driving force for the year. Well, you know, anytime you want to come on this ridiculous podcast, anytime you know, even if it's a post game thing, if you're to say, Kirk, you know, it's the second quarter, I got some takes. Chances are Josh and I are going to be willing to have you on. So you just let us know, Ben.
Absolutely. And I will do it. And I really cannot wait for the apology podcast for getting literally everything I just said wrong here.
All right, guys, this has been Kirk Henderson and Ben Collins. I will put all, you know, pertinent information into the podcast link. You, if you haven't subscribed to us, guys, go look us up. Mavs Moneyball Podcast is the feed. And this has been Kirk, Your Enthusiasm. Everybody have a great weekend.